Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today, it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Carolyn Boris. Carolyn packed her bags, left everything that was familiar, and moved halfway around the world. Why? She was desperate for some relief. Carolyn had already been in education for more than 20 years and experienced anxiety, panic, and dread when faced with work-life imbalance, unrealistic expectations, and the feelings of guilt and failure because she wanted something better for her life. The thought of having to stay where she was for another 15 years before she could retire was incomprehensible to her. Carolyn has been an international educator now for almost 20 years, but taking such drastic measures is not doable for everyone. Changing the scene doesn't necessarily change the details. Carolyn believes there's a much simpler and faster way for effecting healthy change. Carolyn's goal is to help educators who are experiencing burnout restore their self-esteem and confidence and to reclaim their personal power using proven tools and techniques that she knows provides life-changing results. And with that, Carolyn, welcome. You are a return offender to the Teaching Journeys podcast. This is your second appearance. You were at episode 104, and we talked a lot about teacher burnout, what you do to help teachers kind of reset, recharge. We talked a little bit about your services, but we're going to take a deeper dive into some more specific services that you offer, including a new program that you have that I'm excited to get into.
Okay, great. Okay, Dave, where do you want me to start? What would you like to ask?
Wow, that leaves that wide open. Yeah, I'm a teacher. You should never leave that door so wide open for me.
Exactly. But, you know, I mean, it's an inquiry process, right?
Well, let's start. In our last episode, we touched a little bit on the services you provide through Carolyn Boris Hypnotherapy. Tell our audience a little more about what hypnotherapy is, how it works, and what the benefits are as it relates to physical and emotional health.
Okay. I am an RTT practitioner. RTT stands for Rapid Transformational Therapy, and I'm also a certified hypnotherapist. And RTT happens to be a hybrid. It uses the best aspects of neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP, of psychotherapy, of hypnotherapy, and also of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. And using the best aspects of those modalities, I guess the word is, RTT also has specialized tools and techniques that we use to help people uncover what is holding them back, what their limiting beliefs are. In hypnosis, we flip those beliefs so that people can end up living the life that they envision. That's basically it in a nutshell. And we use hypnotherapy, we use hypnosis to access the subconscious. And when we do that, we can find out what is the limiting belief that is holding you back? Where did it come from? Why did you develop it? Once we come to that, an understanding of what that limiting belief is, then we can flip that belief and turn it into a belief that serves you rather than holding you back. I think, Dave, as you know in your own work, that so many of us have limiting beliefs we don't even know that we have. We just know that we end up staying stuck, where we end up attracting the same relationships, the same jobs, we have the same financial problems, we don't know why. And so I like to think of limiting beliefs like an anchor. If we can envision a boat and there's an anchor, we know that the anchor is below the surface of the water. We can't see it. We just know that it's there because the boat is not moving. Well, that's more or less like what our limiting beliefs are. They anchor us and we can't move. And we just know that we're stuck. But if we can cut the chain between the anchor and the boat, then the boat is free to move. Just like in hypnosis, if we can cut that chain, that limiting belief that's holding you, then you're free to move towards the life that you want. Then you're free to remember what your superpowers are. Because as long as you are in the depths of despair, all you can see is that your life isn't working. You think your whole life is a mess. You think your whole life is not working. That's not necessarily the case, but that's all that you can see because that's what's right in front of you. So, you know, when we can flip the limiting belief, we start remembering what we've accomplished. I wrote my first book. I, you know, had my first kid. I bought my first house. Then we start to fly and we start, as I say, living the life that we envision. So that's basically it in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I mean, limiting beliefs, I mean, you can look at that from a cognitive behavioral therapy standpoint. CBT deals with limiting beliefs all the time.
Sure.
And one of the things I've discovered is beliefs are, once they're ingrained and they're reinforced, it's very, very difficult to change unless the person, one, is motivated to change and realizes that they need to change. So I could see where hypnotherapy would be effective. And obviously, we're going to talk a little more about rapid transformational therapy. I can see where those two in combination would be.
Sure.
You know, and the other things too, our beliefs not only dictate our behavior, but our beliefs, I think, contribute to our how we feel physically and how we feel emotionally. I'm sure you know, Dan Condren wrote a book called Permanent Healing, where he talks about how our thoughts impact how we feel physically and how we can modify our beliefs or thoughts to improve how we feel physically. And of course, I would say, you know, you don't disregard Western medicine. Your thoughts by itself,
yes,
for many people aren't going to, they're going to make you feel physically better, but you still need the integrative piece with Western medicine to ensure prime health. But, you know, the beliefs, once they're reinforced, the behavior becomes almost automatic. And there's kind of like this learned helplessness that I think individuals develop. And a sense of a lack of self-efficacy that no matter what they do, it's not going to affect any positive change.
Sure, sure. And I think one of the things that we see with RTT is that once we find out what that limiting belief is, why you acquired it, and lots of times that limiting belief developed in childhood. But once we find out where it came from, why you have it, and when we flip that, then you know, you're empowering the individual. They get back their personal power. And then they know, oh, that's what's holding me back. Now I know what I need to do to change. Yes. But the thing is, you can't change what you don't know. That's the thing, right? And so often, we don't know that we have these limiting beliefs that are driving our behavior, that are giving us the outcomes that we don't, we just know we don't want those outcomes, but we don't know how to change. You know, I remember my dad saying to me many, many years ago, my dad didn't know anything about psychology, hypnotherapy or anything like that. And I don't know, I was complaining to him about, I don't know, whatever it was. And he'd say, well, you know, you just have to get over it. And I thought, I'd get over it if I knew how. How do I get over it? And I think we hear that from people. Oh, we'll just forget about it. Well, I'd forget about it if I knew how to forget about it.
Yes.
But when it keeps going over and over in my head, what do I do about that? How do I deal with that, right? Yeah. So as I said, I mean, we can't change what we don't know. And so this allows us to know what is going on, so that we can empower ourselves.
Yeah.
So.
You can't change what you don't know. And I think one of the things I tell my students, one of the mistaken assumptions about clients is that just because they want to change doesn't mean they know how to change. You know?
Exactly.
And if they're telling you, they're coming into to a treatment session or a coaching session saying, you know, Dave or Carol, I want to change my behavior. I don't know how. We need to take that seriously. And then we need to try to say what we need to collaborate with them to determine What skill set, what set of skills, what set of coping strategies do you need to be able to get rid of those limiting beliefs, modify those limiting beliefs, and co-create the life of your choosing in conjunction with the universe? How can we help you get there? But we can't. We can't unless we put a premium on education first.
That's right. I'm glad that you used the word co-create, because that's just what I was thinking. We co-create. We work this together. It's not like, you know, I'm not anybody's guru, right? Right. And so we work together on this, right? I remember years ago when I had gone to an NLP therapist for whatever it was, and so many times I would before I walk in, I'm going, yep, I know what we're going to talk about today. And as soon as I sat down and he said, well, Carolyn, how are you today? What came out of my mouth was something totally different. I'm going, well, where did that come from? Apparently that was what needed to be worked on. Not what I thought. Yes. You know, again, we don't know. We're often not aware of what's driving our belief, what's driving our behavior. Yeah. But once we start to take the layers off the onion, then things start to get clear.
Yep. Yeah. So. Root cause is always important. You have to take a look at the root cause of any behavior, any belief. And once you know the root cause, then you can address the root cause in addition to the limiting belief.
Yes. And Marissa Peer, who developed RTT, and just to give your listeners a bit of a background, Marissa Peer is a very well-known therapist who's been around for more than 30 years, has written books, is a speaker. And I remember her saying that over more than 30 years, out of the thousands of people that she's worked with, she said that there basically are only three things that are wrong with people. They either believe they're not enough. I'm not tall enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good looking. I'm not rich enough. I'm not young enough. Not old enough. Whatever. They're not enough in some way. Or they think that they're different, so therefore things aren't working. Or they believe that they can't get what they want.
Yes.
For whatever reason. So people have one, two, three, or all of those. They come to you with, you know, and I don't know, you've probably experienced this in your own client sessions, but you know, when we're doing the work, and sometimes when you get to that root cause, the client is in hypnosis and they start to understand, oh, this happened to me, this and this happened to me, this is how I felt, and this is what I've come to believe about myself as a result. Sometimes, Dave, it's fascinating seeing the physical change that comes over them. I remember very clearly this one client I had as we were going through this process. Before my very eyes, as she was processing and dealing with this and coming to an understanding and releasing it, she started to sit up taller. Her shoulders came up. Her head came up. The lines, I want to say, on her face just like just loosened up, and her voice even sounded different. And I was watching this transformation before me. I'm like, this is amazing. And afterwards, when we were speaking, you could just see how her face was so, her eyes were so bright, and she had color in her cheeks, and she was sitting up and talking with confidence. It really is amazing. So,
when we develop insight based on acquiring skills that help us address the root causes of our limiting beliefs, it's like our body just releases all of that trauma.
We
become more engaged. We become more open. We become more excited. We become more confident because now we realize that what I did because this is all I knew. Now that I've realized what I did, and now I realize that I can change those with applying basic skills that are tailored to me, it makes a world of difference. Then you can do the insight-oriented therapy. Then that becomes more effective.
Absolutely. So, and when people feel, oh my gosh, I'm the one driving the boat, like this limiting belief isn't, I'm the one driving, I'm the one now who can decide whether I go in this direction or that direction. And I no longer have to feel as though I'm being pushed and as though I have no control. I'm the one at the steering wheel. And it's a huge sense of power, taking back personal power. But as long as we feel as though, well, you know, that's just the way life is. And, you know, that's because I grew up with an alcoholic family. And, you know, life is just buffering you. You're like a rudderless ship and you have no direction. And well, that's just the way life is. But when you start to see that's not the way life is. But, you know, once you slightly shift your perspective, everything changes.
Yes.
You know, I remember many years ago when I was doing this martial arts class, and one of the, that night we were doing hand techniques, and it was how to do takedown. The partner I was working with was a really athletic guy. He was a member of the national swim team. So he was all muscle, right? And so the technique that we had to do had something to do with, it was a wrist technique, I think. I could not do it whatsoever. And you know, Dave, all I did was slightly change where I was holding his wrist. Boom, down he went. Look, I said, did you let me do that just because you feel sorry for me? He said, Carolyn, I couldn't have stopped going down if I'd tried. But I thought, isn't that a life lesson? All you do is simply shift your perspective, your belief, your what, and everything changes. Mm. It's like the game of dominoes. A big change can happen with a small move, right? And so I think when people are feeling overwhelmed with their life, like they want to do this, but they're so overwhelmed, they don't know where to start. You don't need a five-year plan. All you need is one small step, and then you take the next small step, and your path will open up. You can have an idea of where you want to go, but the path opens up as you move along it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when we understand that we don't need the whole plan, it's impossible to have the whole plan right now, then it relieves the pressure.
Yeah.
Go, I just need to make a small step. You don't have to make a dramatic move. You just have to make a move.
Yes. Yeah, and I think Buddha was attributed to saying a 1,000-mile journey starts with a single step.
Right. Right. So, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
As I said, I think that relieves a lot of the pressure that, and the thing is, when we think, well, we can't do it because we don't have the five-year plan or the 10 or whatever, then we've got decision paralysis. Yeah. Because we think it has to be perfect. We have to have all the answers. We never have all the answers. Come on. You know, we think we're in control, but we're not really in control. We've lived long enough, Dave, to know we're not in control, really.
No, and we don't have all the answers.
No, absolutely not. So it's by giving ourselves some grace that we go, oh, I can take a breath. I can step back and, oh, okay. What's one thing I can do? You know, getting back to this NLP therapist that I mentioned, I remember him telling me one time that people tend to ask the wrong question. They ask, why does this always happen to me? And as soon as you ask that question, of course, your brain is going to generate all kinds of reasons why, and it's going to put you in situations to show you why. The question that people need to ask is, what do I need to do now? And he said, that's the powerful question, because as soon as you ask that, your brain starts generating options. You want to know it? Well, you could do this, or you could do that, or you could do this, or you could do that. But as long as we feel as though we're stuck in a corner, that we don't have options, because why does this always happen? I grew up in an alcoholic family. Well, no wonder this always happens. We're going to stay stuck, right?
Yeah. So. Yep. Yeah, and I mean, I think the important part of addressing limiting beliefs is not only the root causes, but the history behind that belief, sure. You know, because you know that if rules get passed down from generation to generation and those rules are unhealthy and they aren't changed, the genetic code doesn't need to be altered. Those rules are just going to carry from generation to generation and contribute to those beliefs that occur. So, I want to shift for a second. You talked about RTT, or rapid transformational therapy. Why, from your perspective, is it so effective?
I think it's so effective because because when you look at regular hypnotherapy, it can take maybe 45 minutes or so in a 90-minute session, for example, to do the induction, to get the person to go down the steps, to get into hypnosis. You've done 45 minutes of that. You only have like maybe 30 minutes or whatever to get to the actual whatever is going on. But in RTT, the tools that we use, the induction is maybe 5 or 6 minutes. Then we're in hypnosis, then boom. Then we go into, okay, the first scene, the second scene, the third scene. What have you come to believe about yourself? The left hand, right hand technique. Okay, so this is what we looked at, and this is where you are now. So what is connecting the two? So it's the tools and techniques that we use to get the person to reframe their limiting beliefs, and then we provide the transformation. It's a 15 to 20 minute audio. The transformation audio is so important because those words are the client's words. Before we do the therapy session, when we do the intake session, that's where I get to know you and not your resume. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We ask questions like, okay, what is the presenting problem here? What is it you want help with? Because when you ask people, well, you know, what do they want to work on? Sometimes they give you a shopping list. Well, I want to work on this and this and this and this and this. Well, in this session, we're working on the thing that is the most important to you right mm-hmm. now. And then when you know what that problem is, then you say, okay, how does this show up? What are the symptoms? What are the triggers? What are the habits that happen? And then you go into, well, and this is the really good question. If I had a magic wand and I could give you anything you wanted, what is it that you would want? Those words are extremely important. And then the really important question is, what would your life be like without the problem?
Yes.
You know, what would you look like? What would you sound like? How would you walk? How would you stand? What would your facial expressions be? What would the thoughts be going on in your head? What would you be thinking about yourself? What would other people say about yourself? What would a day in your life be like if you did not have this problem? So you're collecting all of that information. So in the transformation, after you've dealt with the limiting beliefs and you've reframed all of that stuff, then you're in that relaxed, you're still hypnotized. So you're in that relaxed, focused state and you're hearing your words back. And that then you listen to that transformation recording for a minimum of 21 days so that you can start to develop new neural pathways, right? Mm. And so like one session takes about a month to go through by the time you do, you know, the intake and the session and then the follow-up and the listening and all of that. So the tools and techniques that we use result in rapid transformation. So instead of taking maybe 6 or 8 weeks in like a regular hypnotherapy session to actually get to the results you want, we can get at them really mm-hmm. fast. That's why it's called rapid, right?
Yeah, you know, just listening to you describe the paradigm that you use, it combines hypnosis with RTT, but I also see with some of the questions, I see where solution-focused therapy can work really well with this because the questions you ask are basically solution-focused. What would you see your sure. life being like without the problem? So it's that, those kind of questions that also get those individuals, again, to envision the reality they wish to experience.
Yes.
And the
yes.
fact that their own voice is their guide, to me, is
yes.
very empowering.
Yeah, it's totally empowering. And, you know, sometimes as you're doing the transformation and they're still in therapy, sometimes when they recognize some of the words that you've said, you know, there might be a slight smile that comes on their face or the nod of the head. It is absolutely, it's very empowering. You probably do this in your own therapy, but, you know, you can't have, unless you can future pace yourself, there can't be any change. If you can't see yourself in the future with whatever it is that you want, you're not going to get there. Because if you can't visualize it, if you can't see it, how is it going to happen? So future pacing is extremely important.
It's manifesting the reality you want to experience, but at the same time, right. they're putting in the work to get there.
That's exactly right. And, you know, while we're talking about hypnotherapy, I just want to mention, I want to debunk a few myths that there are still out there about hypnotherapy. The number one myth is when you are in hypnosis, this is not a myth. I should have said it the other way. This is not a myth. When you are in hypnosis, you are in control. The client is always in control. Yeah. If you want to get out of hypnosis, all you have to do is open your eyes. You're out of hypnosis. I cannot make you do anything you don't want to do. If you would not be able to do it because your subconscious is there to protect you. And I can't make you bark like a dog and quack like a duck. That's stage hypnosis. That's entertainment. This is using hypnosis for therapeutic purposes, which is totally different. You're not asleep, because when you're in hypnosis, you and I still carry on a conversation. It's just a sleep of the nervous system. It's just a focused relaxation. And some people say, oh, well, you know, I can't be hypnotized. Well, here's the thing. When you are really engrossed in a movie on Netflix, you're in self-hypnosis. Mm-hmm. When you are engrossed in an art project and all of a sudden 2 hours have gone, you're going, where'd the time go? Well, that's what that was. Or how many times have we driven into our driveway and going, I don't remember going through that traffic light back there. So we do it all the time. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you know, some people might think, or maybe they've heard, that when you're in hypnosis, you actually go somewhere. You don't go anywhere. You're still in your chair. Unless you open up your eyes, you're out of hypnosis, and you go to the kitchen to get a glass of water. I mean, you don't go anywhere. You're right there. You stay there, right? Mm-hmm. So those are some facts I wanted to get across.
Yeah, I think that makes sense because, yeah, there are a lot of myths about hypnotherapy. There's a lot of myths about certain type of interventions that are done. It's our job to debunk those myths, to dispel those myths, and provide some clarity. So do you record your sessions with clients with hypnotherapies? Do you play them back for them, or do you?
No.
Okay.
No. The only recording that is made is the recording of the transformation that they listen to.
Okay.
So yeah, no, I don't record anything. When we do the discovery call to find out if we are a good match for each other, I'm taking notes, some written notes. When we have the intake session, I'm taking written notes. And of course, all of those, that information is done with confidentiality agreement in place, right?
Yes.
And that's the only recording that I do, but no audio recording of the sessions, no.
Yeah, and I think informed consent, particularly when you're talking about doing interventions or treatment that may have some misperceptions, is so important. And particularly that, if the client is uncomfortable being hypnotized, they can come out of it anytime and just, you know, stop the session. So.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And so it's important before the session even starts to make sure that the client has read and has agreed to the terms and conditions, has read and signed the waiver, for sure. It's imperative on my part in the discovery call, right at the very beginning, I have to find out what medications they are on, because I cannot work with people who are schizophrenic, who have borderline personality disorder, who are epileptic, or who suffer from psychosis. I cannot. That has to come out in the first discovery, the very first call that we have. Over and above that, then to find out if we're a fit the rest of the ways. I think it's also important, as I have discovered, I'm sure, to find out, are they seeing you of their own volition? Because if mom or dad or partner or husband or wife made that, like, it's not going to happen. So
or it's going to take a longer process for them to get engaged, either one or the two. But typically if people are forced to do something, they're going to resist.
Exactly. And I don't know if you hold this belief, but I know Marissa Peer said she will not work with narcissists because narcissists don't think anything is wrong with them. They think everything is somebody else's problem.
Well, narcissists are typically very difficult to work with because they don't have insight. They think they can place responsibility for their issues on somebody else, and they have no empathy.
Sure.
The only thing you can probably do is try to in some way get them to see that their behavior isn't helping them achieve their goals, but they're very difficult. I think one of the most difficult clients to work with, I think in addition to clients, they have antisocial personality disorder, but narcissism is really challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's another thing that I would do. If you're a narcissist, I'm not working with you. I know what my boundaries are, and I know what's in my wheelhouse, and I'm not working with that. Go and find somebody else. And how many times is a narcissist there only because the wife said, if you don't get help for this, the marriage is over? Do you know what I mean? It's important to know what you can do, what's in your wheelhouse, and what your boundaries are, right? So,
and it's difficult to work with someone who believes they already have the answers anyway.
Right? They may as well sit in your chair and tell you everything wrong with you and do therapy on you, right? And they would.
I remember there was a colleague that I worked with who was dealing with somebody. If you put narcissistic personality in the definition of it, this guy's picture would have been next to it. He was the ultimate definition of narcissism. So he did a paradoxical intervention. He had him write out his social history. We gave him the thing. He goes, look, you fill this out because you know yourself better than me. He came to the team and said, this was probably the best assessment I've ever seen anywhere, because he was talking about himself and he gave a lot of information. Yeah, it's a very challenging population of individuals to work with. So. I could see where they wouldn't be candidates for hypnotherapy, in addition to the other individuals with other challenges that you had mentioned as well, too.
Right.
So let's talk about another exciting program that you made me aware of just before we were ready to record, about at least a week before, the Teacher Identity Reset Program. Tell us about what it's about, how it originated, and how it's different or complements the other services that you provide for teachers.
Okay, well, I developed this program because I needed it myself. What had happened was, where I was teaching before, I was teaching overseas, and all of a sudden my school went bankrupt. And so I was still teaching full time, but I was doing the RTT work at half time, right? All of a sudden the school went bankrupt. There was no farewell. There was no goodbye. There was no party. I was lesson planning one day and I was packing boxes the next day. And it was such a shock. And I'm going, 45 years of teaching is coming to an end like this? And in the meantime, I mean, I had to pivot so fast. I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't ready to retire because retire was never in my vocabulary. I was just scrambling to figure out where I'm going to go, what I'm going to do. Am I going to do this full time? One thing led to another. I moved where I was and I started my life here. And okay, so I guess I'm getting into RTT full time now. And so I'm starting to rev up the engines here. But I had left some of my things where I'd come because I just didn't know if this situation here would work out and I didn't have enough room in my suitcases. So fast forward. So throughout that year, I was settling and I knew I had those things waiting for me and I knew I had to go back and get them. But I came up with one excuse after another. Oh, well, it's Christmas and the flights are going to be too expensive. Oh, my friends are on holiday. They're not going to be there. Oh, no, it's not the right time. Oh, da, 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 whatever. Any excuse. And so then one day I thought, Carolyn, you've got to go and get the rest of your stuff. So I was making the flight arrangements. And the minute I pressed pay for my credit card to pay for the flight, as soon as I pressed that, a meltdown like you would not believe. And not only did that shock me, the enormity of the meltdown shocked me, because I wasn't just crying. I was weeping and I was sobbing. And I went, where has this come from? Because, you know, for the last year, I guess I still hadn't dealt with the fact that I had to move and it was a crisis and the school still owed me tens of thousands of dollars that I would never see. And I'm going, oh my goodness. This is the end of my, when I go and get my things, this is the end of my 45 years of teaching.
Yeah.
How could it have ended like this? And then I was not only was I weeping and crying over that, but I'm going, well, if I'm not a teacher, then who am I?
Yeah.
Well, who am I if I'm not doing that job? And I was not expecting that. And I immediately phoned my RTT colleague in Australia and I said, I need a session with you because this is what happened that I wasn't expecting. So as a result of the session, I came to the understanding and the acceptance that I wasn't giving up teaching. I was expanding teaching. And I'm still teaching. I'm just not in the classroom. I'm teaching on Zoom. I'm teaching through conversations with DMs. I'm teaching on podcasts. I've expanded teaching. So teaching, I didn't leave teaching. Teaching in the classroom left me.
Yeah.
But then I expanded it into this now. And basically, Dave, you know, I mean, when I'm still dealing with humans, except they're just taller than the ones I dealt with before. And I still have a purpose. The thought of getting up every morning and my thought, and if my thought was, how am I going to fill my day now? I can't do it. I cannot be living a life like that. I cannot. I have to have some purpose. And so I went through a whole thing to get to that point. It was releasing all kinds of emotions like guilt and fear and shame and then anger at this happening. And then once I started to calm down, I started to listen to my own voice, like, Carolyn, you still have skills. The skills that you acquired as in the class, those skills travel with you. They don't belong to the job. They belong to you. You can use those skills outside of the classroom. You know, I started to remember that I had interests before I became a teacher. But the thing is, as you know, Dave, the invisible weight of this profession just bears down on us so heavily that we've lost sight of what did we used to be involved in or what did we used to like to do before, right? Because we're carrying the guilt of this profession. We feel guilty because we might want to leave. But we've got the what ifs and the shoulds and the what happens this. And so that's going through our head. But then we've got the well-meaning messages, the well-meaning advice from friends and family and colleagues. Well, why are you giving up all those holidays? You've got great pension, you've got great benefits. And are you going to, you know, waste those years of university? So all of that stuff is going through a person's head. And you have to find a way of turning that volume down so that you can hear your own voice. Mm-hmm. Once you turn that volume down, then you can start, as in my case, when I had the RTT session, then you can start to pinpoint, okay, what is holding you back? The limiting beliefs again, right? Oh, I'm not a teacher unless I'm in a classroom. Oh, if I'm not in a classroom, then there's nothing else I can do. Oh, you know, I'm too old for anybody else to hire me, or whatever it happens to be in another teacher's experience, right? Once you start, you know, uncovering those limiting beliefs, then again, you start remembering your superpowers and your interests, and you start remembering, oh, I had skills in organization, behavior management, communication with parents. How do I adapt that language into language that the corporate world would understand if that's where I wanted to go? Then you start looking at options because now you start to remember that you do have options.
Yeah.
And once you start looking at that, then you can start saying, okay, with confidence and clarity and focus, you can say, this is the path I'm going on now. These are the small steps I need to take.
Yes.
And going back to what we had said before, realizing you don't need to have a 10-year plan. Don't need to move halfway around the world like I did to change your circumstances. So the process that I just outlined is the process that teachers go through in order to find in order to reclaim their identity. And to help teachers do that, that's what we do with RTT. We use the hypnosis and so on and so forth to help people get rid of the guilt and the shame. And so you start developing confidence. You stop second guessing yourself and go, okay, this is what I'm going to do, right?
Yep.
And you start believing in this path that you're going to follow. And you start, as I said earlier, I mean, I'm not anybody's guru. I'm not going to tell you to stay or to go in teaching. But if you decide to stay in teaching, well, then you're deciding for the right reasons, right? Yep. And maybe if you stay in teaching for the next 2 years, you decide over the next 2 years, you're going to start to create an exit plan. Okay. Or maybe you're going to stay in teaching, but with a few tweaks like change class, change grade level or school districts or cities. Or maybe you are going to leave teaching. Or Dave, let me add this. Or you decide to stay stuck, because that's also a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but the thing I want to say about that is doing nothing doesn't come free.
No.
Because doing nothing has consequences. And so if you decide you're going to stay stuck, which is like, fine, if that's what you decide. But my question is, what is the cost of not? What is the cost of not making a choice?
Mm-hmm.
Well, other than staying stuck, what is the cost to your physical, mental, and emotional health, and to your relationships, and to your professional life? Like, yep. There's a cost for that.
Yep.
So that's what I do in the Teacher Identity Reset Program. We take teachers through that process, and we use RTT to help them get there from point A to point Z, if that's where they want to go. And, you know, after I realized that that was an issue that was dear to my heart, because I just gone through that and I knew what it took, as I started to continue reading through teacher Facebook groups, oh my gosh, Dave, there are so many teachers who want to leave, but they're afraid to because they don't know what to go to. Teachers who are maybe 10 years in the profession, or maybe they're looking down the barrel of retirement, or maybe they just recently retired, but they don't know what to do. They feel lost. They don't have a schedule. They don't have the lanyard around their neck. And we end up thinking that our identity is only because we've got the lanyard around our neck, right? And so who am I if I don't have that rhythm to my day? If I'm not in the September new teacher photos? The first September, I wasn't in the new teacher photos. I'm telling you, I'm going, okay, I'm seeing this feed coming through of everybody's first day of school and everybody's new shoes and new markers and new pencils and the excitement and getting the bulletin boards ready. And I'm going, yeah, I'm not there.
No.
Where exactly am I and what am I doing? You know, so, you know, teacher identity for some people, not for everybody, but for some people, that's such a huge, huge piece. And, you know, I think it's important for people to recognize that when you have a major life transition, there's grief involved.
Absolutely.
There's absolutely grief. And you have to give yourself grace. You have to give yourself the gift of time, because it does take time to process all of that. And we know processing, it's not linear. You know, you take two steps forward, one step back. But you need to give yourself time to process that. You know, it's like that children's book, Going on a Bear Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Can't go over it, can't go under it, can't go around it. Gotta go through it.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, when you were talking about the meltdown that you had when you pressed that pay button for your credit card, first thing I was thinking of was just grief. I mean, you're talking about 45 years of your life invested in one system. There's grief associated with that. There's grief when you, even if the job that you, what you did is not a job that you would return to, there's still grief when you leave it because of the relationships you made and the investments that you made. So it's like, kind of roll with that. You experience that. You look at it for what it is, and then you try to move forward. But I think a couple of things. I think once a teacher, always a teacher. Like, you know, you're going to be teaching in a variety of different capacities, not necessarily in a classroom. And one of the things that your program will do is help individuals see that we're all teachers at heart. And it's just a matter of how do we want to apply our teaching skills.
Sure.
The second thing that you mentioned is about consequences. That we can choose to stay stuck. And I tell my students, there's a consequence to every behavior that you engage in. So just make sure you choose the behavior wisely, you choose the consequences wisely, and that you're accountable for whatever consequences that you experience. If you can do that, then let your free will be your guide.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Anyhow, it's funny how things are born out of your own experience. I'm just saying, this program was born out of my own experience and my own need to come to grips with that whole teacher identity piece, you know? And I think I also had to grieve the fact that this is not the way I envision my career to end.
Yes.
I didn't have a say in it. That's how what I think I was grieving. I was sad about, but I was also really mad about. I didn't have a say in it. I wanted to leave on my own terms, not like that, not like, you know, as I said, lesson planning one day and packing boxes the next day, and then there was no goodbye there. There was like nothing over and above the fact that school still owes me thousands of dollars that I'm never going to see. But I just didn't expect it to end like that. So, you know, can't do anything about it. So,
no, I think one of the things I've learned as I've gotten older, I realize that there's less and less that's in my control anymore.
Right. And so you have to, I had to dig down deep to find my resilience in this whole thing.
Yep.
I certainly experienced a whole gamut of emotions, like the guilt and the fear and the shame and the anger and the sadness and the whole rainbow of emotions. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the enormity of what teachers are facing when they post in Facebook groups. I don't know what I would do if I didn't teach.
Yeah.
There's the question, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's important, I think, that whatever your job of choice is, whatever you've made your primary living with, is that planning for retirement or moving to other activities other than work is so important to develop other interests, other hobbies.
Yeah.
For me, teaching arose when I was a clinician, and I was able to, and once I retired as a clinician, teaching was kind of just a logical segue for me. And then from there, it branched into other things, you know, teaching through the podcast, teaching through any writings that I might have done. So that has, that, and you know, applying my clinical experience that I had for 27 years into, you know, the interactions that I've had with people, into the bereavement support that I did. So everything has a purpose. Everything that we did in the past dictates what we do in the present, and we can always apply that. So,
absolutely.
Carolyn, you've left us with a lot today, and I so appreciate the time that we always spend together. And with that, we are coming close to our time to end right today. So I'm going to ask you for a couple last questions. One, if you're going to give our listeners one final takeaway today, what would that be?
The same takeaway I gave the last time, and that is, help is available. There's no need to navigate these challenging waters by yourself. I did it like 35 years ago when I was going through challenges in teaching, but there wasn't the help available then that there is now. Mm-hmm. Help is available. You just need to ask. And that's where our shame comes in. I'm a teacher. I should be able to handle this. Therefore, I'm not going to, no. Help is available. Help is available. We've all gone through teacher stuff.
Yeah.
So help is available.
And my last question, if people want to contact you to find out about your services, what's the best way for them to do that, Carolyn?
They can contact me. They can email me, Carolyn@CarolynBorisHypnotherapy.com, or they can also go to my website, CarolynBorisHypnotherapy.com.
I'll make sure all of that information gets into the episode notes when it drops on YouTube and my other podcast platforms. And with that, Carolyn, thanks so much again for a great conversation. It's always a blast spending time with you and getting together so we can solve the problems of the world. So,
exactly. Thank you so much, Dave. Thanks.
My pleasure. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.